On then.
No, thank,
welcome to listen in. Sharon Young. Okay, that's next bill. We'll go then. John Leiberger's already testified. Ed Sniffen's testified. We'll go to Bruce Music in Anchorage.
The only thing I would like to talk about is kind of telling the point the difference between what a current model vehicle is and what a new one is. Realizing, of course, that August of a preceding year is normally when a new model vehicle is released, that means that for a period of 17 months, that current model vehicle basically is out of our hands. Now, Amendment 1 just now added, or the amendment just now added, new customers that can sell vehicles and whatnot. But my concern is the fact that there are, you know, multitude of auctions in the lower 48 that we actually go to and attend and purchase vehicles from that specifically, you know, they don't have Canadian vehicles there. So what you're doing also, as well as with the Canadian vehicles, is limiting the amount of the American credits and the Volkswagen credits and the General Motors vehicles and the Ford Motor vehicles that come through there. Current model years within, like I said, at least 17 months, and on an early model release, you know, could be as many as 24 months before that vehicle is actually eligible for us to purchase at one of those types of auctions, even though it may be a U.S. type vehicle. And I'd just like to have the consideration in the first section of this bill have those items considered as well.
Hey, thanks, Bruce, for your testimony. Again, I'll keep reiterating, thanks for waiting for so long on this bill. Diana Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Chairman Anderson. My name is Diana Pfeiffer. I'm currently president of the Alaska Automobile Dealers Association, as well as Alaska Sales and Service in Anchorage and North Phillip. I'm expressing my support of House Bill 272. In addition to testimony that's been given by previous parties, including Mr. Allwine and Assistant Attorney General Sniffen, I will add a couple of things. On the odometer issue, franchise automobile dealers have a computer system connected to the manufacturer that will allow them to verify mileage on automobiles. I don't believe independent used car dealers have access to that information. The warranty issue has been addressed quite well. Mr. Sniffen addressed the lemon law. These newly used automobiles are not qualified for the Alaska lemon law. In our dealership, we get a lot of people coming into our store who don't know how to operate their automobiles. Being a franchise automobile dealer, we invest millions of dollars in facility, training, special tools and equipment, and proper delivery of automobiles so the consumers know how to properly and safely operate them. Another thing that franchise automobile dealers have is direct communication with the manufacturer that if there is a safety issue on the automobile, they can issue a stop delivery order, which happens occasionally. Case in point, last year we had a stop delivery on a particular body line of SUVs. That meant that we could not deliver those vehicles. It also meant that the manufacturer required the owner to have them towed back to the dealership. They were given replacement automobiles until they could safely repair them. Used automobile dealers, at that time we noticed 5 such automobiles on local used car lots, the newly used automobiles that the manufacturer had requested and insisted and ordered no delivery on. Recalls is another issue that used car dealers don't have access to. However, most automobile dealers have direct communication with those customers through the computer system. Another thing that I believe Canadian titles do not show liens on them. There's a possibility that automobiles may have a previous lien on them. I also understand.
Diana, if you could wrap it up, please. We're trying to be fair to stick to the 2 minutes for everybody equally.
I certainly will. Speaking on behalf of new car automobile dealers, our investment in our franchise, our training on our product, and our knowledge of the vehicle, we pay to be a franchise new car automobile dealer, and we request your support on this bill.
Thank you. We have Richard Hyatt next. Richard, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. Thanks for waiting. If you're going to duplicate, I see you're from Alaska Sales. You might want to waive your time because we would like to vote on this bill today. But if you have extra, go ahead and testify.
I can be very brief. My name is Richard Hyatt. I am from Alaska Sales and Service. I am service manager there. There was a question about how many vehicles are involved in the export across the lines from Canada. In 1996, it was approximately 16,000 vehicles. In 2002, it was up to over 200,000 vehicles. So it's quite prevalent. There are a number of owners that buy their new, like new vehicles here on local car lots to come to us to try to get a better understanding of how to program all the different computer systems on their automobile with memory seats, different lock configurations, ABS brakes, traction control devices. These are items that we send our people outside for training to be able to demonstrate to the customer how to properly use them, and our technicians out to get training on how to properly repair them. My last closing statement, I guess, a transaction that starts out in Canada with fraud, where they take a local citizen to pose as a new car buyer so they can then convert it to a used car for resale. Once it starts out that way, I don't see how it could be a legitimate transaction after that. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Richard. By the way, whoever said the profanity, disconnect if you're going to make comments like that, and we can't find out who called in on that line, but thank you. Daryl Freese from Budget Car and Truck, 2 minutes. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you. In response to the Canadian issue, it's had that happen 200,000 times a year that it's being illegally done. I have to question that. And a few other statements with Mr. Sniffen. In regards to Section 1, I do oppose it. I think it needs to be rewritten. There is a difference between a new and a used vehicle. I believe that it's written in the law already what a new vehicle is and what a used vehicle is. Once it's been titled, it's considered used. In addition to that, I do also have another portion of that bill. I know that you've made some amendments to it already. The amendment that I would hope it would be made that any vehicle purchased at a recognized auction should be allowed to be purchased by independents and resold. And an independent or new car dealership can purchase this vehicle. I think that would probably alleviate a lot of problems.
Hey, thank you very much, Daryl, for your brevity. Well, next go, we have two more folks that I have online here. John Burke and then Martin Martinson. So, John, go ahead. 2 minutes.
Chairman Anderson, I don't believe John is here in Anchorage with us today.
Okay, thank you. We'll go next to Martin Martinson, Continental Auto.
Thank you, Chairman and Committee. I would just like to give you an example of some of the experiences that we've had at Continental Honda. We are a Honda dealer, and Honda took a very firm stance on imported Canadian vehicles from the very, very beginning, and now many of the manufacturers have followed. Case in point, we have had cars, Canadian cars, that were purchased at local Canadian dealers, local Anchorage dealers that are selling Canadian vehicles, and have come to us for warranty work. And whether we want to help them out or not, Honda will not provide any kind of assistance in any type of work on Canadian vehicles. Now, as far as having a free warranty from your used car dealers and then going to an independent shop, you are not receiving the trained technicians or the machines needed to fix those cars correctly. And I think it's only fair that they should have to go to manufactured or a franchise dealer. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks, Martin. I don't see anyone else on my list from Anchorage or from Fairbanks or on the off-net. Anyone else in the committee room? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. And I think
Chairman,
we've debated this bill enough, but Representative Roakberg?
Mr. Chairman, we have an amendment before us we need to adopt, and there's well, a question about it, Mr. Lester.
It's already been adopted.
No, it hasn't. It has been?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So, are there any comments regarding
this?
Sorry,
I'm just trying to help.
Seeing none, can I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roakberg.
I move that we move House Bill 272 with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
As amended.
As amended.
Any objection?
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg objects. Want to speak to it or just go to the vote?
Well, we can do either one, but I can tell you that last year when 182 passed, there was very strong opposition to any consumer protection being built into that legislation. And I think this is a continuation of that. And without having some consideration for the consumer, I'm worried and I'm not supporting restructuring of the relationship between auto dealers.
Thanks, Representative Guttenberg. With that objection noted, if we could have a roll call vote from the Secretary.
Representative Guttenberg.
No.
Representative Lynn.
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Yes.
Representative Gatto.
Yes.
Representative Volkberg.
Yes.
Representative Crawford.
Yes.
Chairman Anderson.
Yes.
6 yeas, 1 nay.
So, House Bill 272, as amended, passes from this committee and moves on. Thank you, everyone, for testifying. So we go next to, I've adjusted the order, and Representative McGuire knows this, and we'll get to her bill on Monday. So now we will go to, and I'm told that several committees are still meeting, just for the committee's knowledge, HB 305, Employment Compensation Benefits. And I don't see... I don't see the commissioner here, but you can, if you read 305, this is brought to my attention and sponsored to this committee by me. And I see the commissioner there. I just wanted to reference the sponsor statement. This has to do with unemployment compensation benefits and raising those commensurate to not only other states, but to what's necessary. With cost of living and with inflation and the works, and we haven't done this in a while, and I think it's important to look over. So we have the commissioner here, Clary, and he can present more definitively the merits of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Greg O'Clary. I'm the commissioner of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and I know you're running on a timeline, so I'll be brief. This bill has been long in the coming. Both bodies of the legislature dealt with a similar bill over the last 2 years. For reasons unbeknown to most of us, it was not acceptable to folks in the construction industry on the employer side and was hung up in the other body, first in finance and then in rules. This is a product that we bring before you that's a product of a compromise, a total of 5 meetings with the construction industry representatives, and other employers were also invited to the meetings. We didn't have full participation by all of the employers, but those that are impacted the most, the construction industry was involved with organized labor, and this is the compromise piece of legislation. The only difference in the bill that you passed before and this bill is that the effective dates have been moved forward, and the last increment, they split the difference between the original bill that didn't pass and this one. So instead of the top line being as high as it was, this will be at 308?
I think so.
Yes.
Yep.
And the bill is not as complicated as you may seem. I know when you look at a bill that has a whole bunch of numbers on it, it always, your eyes kind of glaze over, but the net effect of this bill is that it helps the economy of Alaska by putting more money on the street during the off season when employers are unemployed. And it keeps skilled workers in Alaska instead of having to go south to look for other employment or to go to places where their costs of living are much lower. And in many cases, our skilled workers are not coming back to Alaska. And this moves us from number 47 in the nation in terms of the top weekly benefit to around 28th or 29th at its end. The first actual impact on employers occurs in the year 2006 when their tax rates will be impacted. I brought staff here today from the Unemployment Insurance Tax Unit that can answer questions that your committee may have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any questions for the Commissioner or for his representatives? Representative Roper.
Hi, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I understand that there's a, is there a relatively large surplus in the, an account that you deposit these funds in? And
in the trust fund?
Right.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roker, I'll have Pat Shire answer that question. Pat Shire is the UI tax expert.
Why don't you both sit there? That's great. And if you could state your name and who you're with again.
My name is Patrick Shire. I'm Chief of Tax and Program Integrity for the Department of Labor Workforce Development UI program. The UI Trust Fund is self-balancing. Currently, I believe the balance, without looking at the actual data, fluctuates every day, approximately $220 million through the chair.
Thanks, Representative Roper.
What is the current, I take it from, I'm just looking at a little worksheet here. The current tax is 2.08% by the employer and 0.52 by the employee. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Roper. The rates vary. There are 21 different rate classes. Mm-hmm. Employers find themselves assigned to one of those 21 rate classes according to their experience in prior years. And the rate that you just quoted might be for one particular group of employers.
Matter of fact, Mr. Chairman, it's really interesting to note, now it refreshes my memory. Having bought purchased a new business in the fall of 2011, about 13 days before the 9/11 incident, it was a new business but had terrible management and grossly overstaffed. Fortunately, we were, because it was a new business, we got an opportunity to go in there and turn a business around. And part of turning a business around is we had to lay off some employees because they actually had, they did have actually too many people working there to do the job. So I recall now, I think our rate went from 1.5 up to
You meant 2001.
2001, yeah, I meant that. I'm sorry. 9/11, is that right? There's an old car I have, fortunately. Anyway, because we laid off people, our rate just like almost doubled. And so our withholding taxes and the amount of taxes we're paying just skyrocketed. Because actually what we did, we saved the business and saved some jobs, and then it's like getting a penalty for it. But so that's what your testimony is, that you rate, the tax rate varies given the experience of a type of employment group or sector on the one hand, and also the experience in terms of layoffs. So if you have more layoffs in a particular year over year or quarter over quarter, your tax rate tends to go up. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Roper. The experience rating depends only on the industry the first year you come to the Department of Labor and sign up for a brand new business where there is no prior experience. As soon as you have four complete quarters in the rating period, then it's based entirely on your experience as an individual. Or if you acquire a business, as you did, for rating purposes, you will inherit the, unfortunately, poor management practices, perhaps,
right,
that they may have had in the past. And the good news is that goes away as as your management skills come to bear on the bottom line, the payroll would be expected to level out. And as those declines in payroll become more distant, 12 quarters is when they fall off the edge of the world. But as those quarters become distant history, the current quarters that you're going through now exert more influence on your rate, and that would be ameliorated.
So 3 years?
At the maximum, through the chair.
Mr. Chairman, I would really appreciate if I could get some information on this as it relates to the range of rates that are charged to businesses. And now, in the your summation here, you've got a total of, are these the average employer tax rates of the 2.08 then? Are these the overall average of the gross amount of rates of dollars collected, or how do you calculate that?
Uh, through the chair, Representative Roakberg. The note here talks about the average employer rate. Of those 21 rates, the lowest being 1.0 and the highest being 5.9. That's a calculated average.
1.0 and 5.9? I have to check and see where I'm at.
Through the chair, Representative Roper, clarification, 5.9 is the number I'm used to using. It includes the employee portion.
Oh, okay.
So 5.4 would be the top rate.
Yeah, could you break those out? I mean, like on the top rate, what's the difference between the employee and employer?
Through the chair, Representative Roper.
4.5?
The top rate is a penalty rate by statute, 5.4%, or by federal regulation, 5.4%. The bottom rate is 1.0.
And is the employee contribution relatively steady then, or does it vary?
Through the chair, Representative Roakberg, it's varies over a very small range. Currently, it's set at 0.5. It has been as high as 0.58.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions on the other committees? Give them a chance, committee members. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The maximum weekly benefit rate amount by state has us being at 28.5 in 06. But I think there's about, I think there's 13 of these states have automatic escalators in there. I was wondering if we're still there if you counted their escalators.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, I believe that our RNA people took a look at that and they built in the escalators that were there. But those, again, those are speculative. But this is, that's why we said about 27 to 28.
Why don't we have quite a few people to testify. I'd like to start on that. Why don't we go to Jay Quakenbush in Fairbanks with the Building and Construction Trade Council. We have three folks in Fairbanks to testify. Go ahead, Jay. If you could keep it to 2 minutes, we're starting to do that the next few days here as we wind down and have many bills and limited time.
I had to leave, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. John Brown next.
I had to leave also, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. John David Reagan next.
Yeah, this is John David Reagan. I live at 0.1 mile Esther Creek Drive in Esther, PO Box 294, Esther, Alaska. I just wanted to testify in favor of this increase in the unemployment to say how important it was for people like us in the construction trades here in Alaska. The other thing I'm kind of curious about is it seems like every time a labor bill comes up, we get a bunch of people here, and then it gets put off till last, and everybody has to go, and they have to pick up kids, or they have to do this or that, you know? I mean, a lot of folks don't have the time to just sit all day and then wait until the labor bill comes up. Last time I testified was on that bill concerning the training wage and minimum wage, and it's not very good to get a bunch of people here to testify and then have it all worn down and just have them fade away until there's nobody here, and then you say, okay, now we'll take testimony. Anyway, thanks a lot.
You know what, and I apologize for that. I appreciate it. The process is difficult sometimes as we organize and order bills, and I didn't mean for those folks to leave. So I do recognize your concern there. Oh, Representative Roakberg for Mr. Reagan.
Yes, Mr. Reagan. You said that this is really important for the construction trade. Could you explain that and why that is?
I'm in Local 942, and the work is not always steady. You'll have times when you have a lot of work and times when you don't. If you want to keep people here in the Alaskan economy and not have people that try to come up seasonal, then you need this. A lot of people depend on this unemployment, particularly, for example, this past season when work up north didn't pan out so well. A lot of people are really counting on that unemployment because you never know when the work's going to come through.
I have a note here that, thank you, Mr. Reagan, that Mr. Peck, I think, has to leave. We'll get to him in Anchorage. Ron Peck, ATIA.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak for this committee, Representative Anderson, regarding House Bill 305. My name is Ron Peck, and I will be brief. I'm the President of Alaska Travel Industry Association. We represent over 1,000 tourism businesses, both large and small, throughout the state. As you're probably aware, tourism has experienced a challenging past season. Prognosis for this summer is not any better. Certain sectors of our businesses tourism are even in a state of decline. Tourism economy is very seasonal in Alaska, with approximately 80% of its business volume occurring in the summer. We have a high number of seasonal employees, and at this point, we're not exactly sure what the implications are for this bill. We're not opposed to it. We are simply requesting, before this bill is passed or enacted and are moved forward, that a complete analysis be done by the state on what the impact would be specifically to the tourism industry. Thanks for the opportunity to speak before this committee.
Thank you, Ron. Is there anyone else in Anchorage? I don't have anybody else on the list.
Excellent idea.
Okay, I don't see anyone there. I don't see anyone. The only other person I have on teleconference is Sharon Young, because Dave is just there for questions. Sharon, are you there for questions too? Okay, Sharon disconnected, it looks like. So we'll go to the committee room, and I don't have a list. I know. Gotcha. I don't have a list. So we're going to have to go in order. Come on up, chamber, and then we'll go to Etheridge. I see Huff. I don't know who else is here to testify, but we'll go in that order, and then after, if there's anyone else.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pamela LeBole, and I'm president of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. We have approximately 700 business members representing approximately 70,000 employees, and employing approximately 70,000 employees, and we have been very involved in this unemployment insurance rate increase for the last 3 years. Commissioner O'Clery said that for reasons unknown that it had trouble getting through a couple years ago.
Last year.
And one of the reasons that it flew through the House year before last, and that's because this chart was being used, and it showed that Alaska was dead last. And as a matter of fact, that was said on the floor. We're dead last, and we can't be there. Well, guess what? There were 27 states listed on this chart, and Alaska was not dead last. The U.S. average, another thing I have to mention, is that we're talking apples and oranges. We talk maximum weekly benefit amount, and we say that it's $248, but in fact, Alaska is one of, I believe it's five states that has a dependent benefit, an additional dependent benefit of $24 per dependent per week, up to three dependents, or $76, $78, $72, excuse me. And so when you add that in, we are at exactly 50% of the average weekly wage, which is the national goal of the UI program, is to have the wage replacement be 50% of the average weekly wage. The U.S. average, according to this very chart that was done by the Department of Labor 2 years ago, the U.S. average was 46%. We are at 50% with the dependent coverage. According to the department last year, when we got the figures out of them on how many claimants have dependents, receive dependent coverage, it was 43% of the claimants received dependent coverage. Now, I have to say that I haven't heard from the department how much this is going to cost employers. I didn't hear them say that. Does anyone know that? The reason there's a zero fiscal note is it's not going to cost the state one thin dime. It's going to cost the employers 80% of whatever the increase is, and it's going to cost the employees 20% of whatever the increase is. So it's a real deal for the state. Now, I would like some information from the department, and I will say that we were invited to participate. Unfortunately, the timing of such, we were unable to make the meetings. And I have spoken with Commissioner O'Clery earlier today, and in fact, on Monday morning, we are going to be given the kind of information we need. What's the cost to employers? What is the cost per employee of the average tax rate? And it's a very complicated picture, and there are a lot of unanswered questions. And the real basic one, since the state's not going to pay a dime of this, is what's it going to cost the employers? Now, the construction trade, they've said this is a great compromise. Well, they're the ones that are going to use it the most, too. The rest of our employers need to weigh in on this, and I need some facts and figures before we can come even close to supporting this bill. Last year in Senate Finance, we made it as far as saying we would go for a 15% increase of the 29% increase that was in last year's bill, that we would go as far as halfway. And that was when we started out saying we'd go 10%, we got up to 15%. And there was no compromise to be had on the other side, and that's why the bill got stopped.
I would want one of the history. Thanks, Pamela. I do want to say that the committee, Representative Roper and I talked before, that you're talking about the dynamics of the committee and that we need to work out some of these issues. If there are issues, some people would think there aren't issues to it, and certainly you do, and I respect both opinions. Conversely, I think it's very important we move the bill along and answer these questions. And so just so you recognize, this isn't the floor of the House. I mean, this still goes to finance, and this still goes through rules, and this still goes to the House floor. And so I recognize there's been several people that testified to say, oh, don't even move it at all, just hold it up. And I don't know if I agree with that, but sure.
May I ask, are you familiar with how much this will cost? Have you been told?
I don't have an exact figure in my
head. So without a cost figure, how much this is going to cost employers, you're just going to move the bill ahead. Is that what my understanding?
Representative Crawford.
From what I understood from the commissioner, there would be no cost at all until 2006 that your rates would stay the same. I'm sure, get answers to that if we called them back. If I could just make a brief comment here.
Please.
I was very disappointed in this bill because it was nowhere near the bill that I had asked for. But I put my bill back with the idea that I would let this task force work together and come up with a reasonable bill. I also acquiesced in that I figured if this wasn't going to be held up and if it was acceptable to the stakeholders that I would go along with it in interest of getting this done this year. But if we're not going to get this done this year, then I will put my bill in and we'll try to go ahead and get what I feel is a fair and equitable return. 50% of average weekly wage is what I'd like to see, and not just with the people that have three kids. I realize that they're 40% of the people that have a dependent in Alaska. That's not saying how many of those have more than one dependent, or have two dependents, or three dependents. But I mean, I know that we're losing good skilled iron workers because they go down to the lower 48. And they don't come back because our unemployment is so low here, they can't afford to stay through the winter or slack times in employment. So we've got to do something about this, and it's gone on too long.
Thanks, sir. So, Representative Crawford, long day, and I know that wasn't a question, it was a comment. I think we have a few more folks in the committee room. We're certainly limited on time with session beginning soon. Do the individuals want to waive their right to speak at this juncture? I see shaking. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? I see no one else at this time in the committee room. Can I have a motion? Representative
motion
Dahlstrom.
Thank you. I move House Bill number 305.
Object.
Okay, there's an objection.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Roper.
I'm a business here. I don't even know what the costs are here. We haven't even talked about the STEP program. Where's this money going to? I mean, this is not even the public process. We got 700 employers asking for the information. We have the tourist industry with their impact on tourism. What's the cost to the employers? What's the cost to the employees? What is this information? We don't even have in this file anything that relates to the dependent claimant. Any adjustments for the true cost of the benefits and or the cost to the tax. I don't even have a tax schedule here. This is ridiculous.
Any other comments, Representative Guttenberg?
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure. I too had a UI bill that was that I was ready to put on the table, and it was considerably higher than this. And my friends from my side of the table said, hold off. All the people, all the parties are sitting down at the table to negotiate this. Some of them fly down from Fairbanks into Anchorage. And I'm sorry that the chamber couldn't meet it, but there's a, you know, there's a lot of people in that group. Somebody could have been at the table expressing their concerns and being part of that negotiation. You know, it's still too low. This is, we hear from the chamber time after time that it's about having competent, qualified people in this state. And the UI is just one small little smidgen of the incentive to keep people here to be qualified workers in the seasons when there is no work.
I assume the commissioner can get the information that's that we've that's been requested.
Yes, I can.
Okay.
All the day, but we have scheduled this meeting with the chamber, Mr. Chairman, because they needed the information.
Just a, I'm sorry. Upset.
Mr. Chairman. I just want this on record. So, I mean, I can't think of how many times we've moved a bill as the first committee of referral, and Representative Roper has stated that we will supplement things. So I understand there's some important issues and some data that a lot of data that needs to be data that needs to be supplemented, but it's not like this is the first time we've done this, so we can move the process along with 12 days. Hearty debate still to come.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond to that. We have all of the information that Ms. LeBeau will examine on Monday. We will also respond to Representative Roekberg's questions in detail before this bill gets to the floor of the House.
Mr.
Representative
Chairman, this bill, this particular bill, is a purview of this committee. The next committee referral is the Finance Committee. They got their chock-a-block full, and they got a lot of work to do. They don't have time to go through this stuff. I mean, it's the responsibility of this particular committee. And I think that the state chamber and the people that have a vested interest in this need to know at least the information. I don't have any problem with looking at the thing, and the fact is that I think we are behind the power curve, but we need to know what the numbers are. How can we talk to the people in the state and the business people if we can't even respond to their questions? We don't have the numbers here. I mean, there's a whole other issue, too, about what happens to some of these funds. There's a whole funding mechanism of the STEP program that this money goes to. I want to find out about that. You know, these people need to stand up and ask these, answer these questions. So, you know, I'm not, I mean, I've in this committee, I've been here for 9 years, and we usually this takes about three hearings of full hearings to go through this stuff. There's a lot of data here, and we don't even see it. We're not asking questions because we don't have it in front of us. I mean, that's what is the, that factor? And as regards to who the stakeholders, this so-called task force, I mean, I'm wondering who was on this task force, who's representing small business people here that are paying the bulk of this stuff.
That can be supplemented, too, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Oh, you're going to supplement the guys who are paying? I mean, give me a break.
No, I'm saying your information can be provided on Monday. Representative Gatto.
I think the Finance Committee depends a great deal on the recommendations we put down, because they are behind the power curve themselves. I'm not prepared with a recommendation. If this passed out of committee, I would not have a recommendation I could put down, because I don't have the information that Mr. Roekberg thinks we ought to have and that I think we ought to have in order to put a recommendation down. So personally, I'm ready to pack up and leave and not get involved in a vote on this, because I don't want to see it leave. You want us back at 9 tonight? I'll come back at 9 tonight with information. If you want me back at 6 in the morning, I'll be here at 6 in the morning. But I am not going to put my name down with any recommendation on the bill for which I don't have the information.
I don't understand this. Is there any more debate on this bill? Hearing none, can we have a roll call vote?
Representative Dahlstrom.
Yes.
Representative Crawford. Representative
Roper.
Come on, Harry.
No.
Sorry.
Yes.
Who's
that?
Representative Roper.
No.
Representative Representative Guttenberg.
Yes.
Representative Lynn.
Yes.
Chair Anderson.
Yes.
5 yeas, 1 nay.
So that bill passes. Information will be presented next week. And as it moves to finance, we will have, I think, all of those questions answered. And we adjourn and we'll return Monday at 3 o'clock. Thank you. And the time is 5:40.